We're live now. I'm sure that many of you were touched in the service, so get on the phone and tell me. The reservations, I want a repeat of what we did last Sunday. I want your reservations in early now. Come on, get on the telephone. Now, two or three things. One, we have a guest here from Indonesia, Dan. Make way there and get a camera out over there. Stand up, Dan, so we can see you. He became a Christian 17 years ago. Started an underground ministry to an underground fellowship, really, ministering to Muslim background people in Indonesia. Over 1,000 have been converted. Nice to have you, Dan. Thanks for being here. The second thing. Now, here's a caller from Copenhagen, Denmark. Watched on the internet today. Thank you, Dr. Scott, for today's teaching. A lot of nice things to say about it. Everybody sit down for a minute. Don't take any more calls. A host of calls from Dallas this morning. I need to remind you, we need Voices of Faith here from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Sunday morning. Let me say that again. 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Sunday morning. 12:30 midnight until 5 a.m. every Saturday night. That's the Las Vegas time. And tonight I need people that will stay till midnight because we're on from 8 to 11 on 56. And then we're on the UPN station again Sunday night from 11 to 12. Having begun, don't slack off, you volunteers. We're hiring new people right and left. And some of you, of course, that $500 a week is an illusion because minimum wage is about $550 or something like that. 12 hours a day, 6 days a week scared some of you. Well, prove to me that you're worth more for less time. Pretty simple, isn't it? I've been known to pay people $10,000 a month. They aren't here, so obviously they weren't worth it. But frankly, I'd be glad to pay that if they'd done their job. And my conditions are pretty simple. March, keep your mouth shut, do what you're told, and learn the difference between being told, solve this problem, don't tell me how, just get it done. That makes people excited. That makes them self-employed on my money. And if they solve the problem wrong, my problem. I get the results of their genius. But unless I say that, do what you're told. And do it my way. I don't much want to use up this valuable time on a little pastoral nugget, but I'm going to do it because I got a house full of Voices of Faith and I need every phone busy. You're starting to see the Gene Scott again who came to town 28 years ago and rescued, with God's help, this ministry that everyone else had written off. Then people got inside my heart. I mean, you can crack a rock with a little bit of tapping if it never stops. I don't think you understand how hard it is to do things God's way. When I teach, I have a PhD in philosophy from Stanford, philosophies of education. I don't come to the Bible with a philosophy looking for scripture to support it. Once I got my faith back, I dug into the scripture to get its philosophy. God's ways are revealed therein, and God's ways are not man's ways. So if you come with preset man's ways, you're going to caricature and warp the word. After years, more years than I've had with you, God had to lament the fact that all the Israelites saw were God's acts. Moses came to know God's ways. And I repeat, God's ways are not man's ways. Furthermore, God uniquely allowed me to be trained in the sickening, demon-possessed, monstrous educational system that captured the mind of America and has virtually destroyed it. From Leipzig University through Columbia's Teachers College in New York, progressive education swept across America, and to many of you, this is old hat and probably boring. I studied under the leading voice of John Dewey's philosophy of education at Stanford University. Larry Thomas was the president of the American Philosophies of Education Teachers Association. Stanford and Berkeley became the front runners of applying experimentalism as a philosophy to education. Getting the marvelously propaganda effective title, Progressive Education. I earned a teacher's general secondary credential in the state of California at the master's level. My undergraduate major was history, the master's in the teaching and social sciences. I would not have been granted my general secondary credential. The master teacher would not have signed off on it if I had not embraced progressive education as a method. A master teacher, too untrained or stupid or both, to know that you cannot separate function from purpose. There was not anywhere in America, through the master's level, a class, a college class in philosophies of education. You were taught the method without ever knowing the philosophy behind it, which inevitably produced the product that the philosophy sought, for which the method was, or function, was designed. I put on the board, preached a year on the taxonomy. I can analyze any social institution, the what and the who, and the what, purpose, function, structures, and controlling forces. You are, I'm sorry, quotes on it humorously, cursed with a pastor, with knowledge. The Catholics long ago learned, you give me the child, I'll own the adult. Half the habit patterns of a lifetime are in a child by the time he's six. You of this generation, you particularly with the mean norm of 40 years old, are the victims of an educational system that makes it virtually impossible to save you. Nobody ever told you, as progressive education invaded the schools and the way you learned became more important than what you learned, and problem solving became the technique of learning, that you were progressively being destroyed as a candidate for eternity. With a godless philosophy, as godless as Darwinism, based upon experimentalism, which starts itself with an epistemology which is the science of what can be known, what's knowable, and the science of learning. And I don't throw these words around often. This is what I'd be teaching if I were doing what I had been trained to do. An epistemology of idealism. And you've heard me say you can divide the whole world into two camps. Epistemology of realism versus epistemology of idealism. You cannot prove either one. Your a priori emotional state, thinking process determines your choice. All you can ever describe about anything on this earth is a relationship you have with it. Describe that camera. You're going to talk in terms of relationships. It's hard. Not to quantum mechanics. It's round. It's got certain colors. Oh, I know you're going to... Okay, let's get scientific. All right, let's get scientific. Break it down to atoms. Neutrons, protons, quarks. All you've done is extend your sensory apparatus or deductively extend probability of extending that sensory apparatus. You're still describing a relationship you're having with it. Now, the idealist says there's nothing there but the relationships. All you're describing is relationships. And what we call a thing is a foci of relationship. I could spend 6 months in an American college before any of my students begin to grasp that. Because we are realists in our thinking, because our language fixed our thought patterns. Modern scientific instruments have proven that a child who learns two languages, while you're a child where it's easier to learn language, has sections of his brain develop that children who only learn one language don't have developed. It's too late to start when you're grown. The brain's still forming in a child. And our thought patterns are conditioned by the other view in epistemology, which is realism. Okay, you've got me. No matter what I do to try to tell you what that is there, I can only describe it in terms of a relationship I'm having with it, either directly in normal sensory apparatus through extension of those sensory apparatus and mathematical and deductive extensions of that extension. We've run out of, in quantum mechanics, we've run out of extensions because we're down at the base level of reality where to position something is to change either its movement or its being. Okay, you've got me. Okay. All I can describe, Mr. Idealist, is a relationship. But whether I can describe it or not, there's something there I'm having my relationship with. Because that's the way I'm trained to think. That's the language I learned. Because in the English language, and most of the Western languages, the verbs change, the nouns, the entities, don't always change. I run, I ran, I will run, I have run. The verb changes, I stayed the same. I run to him, I will run to him, I have run to him, I'm going to run to him again. I and him stayed the same. So I'm conditioned to think realistically. I may not be able to describe it, that's why we keep splitting the atom, which means indivisible or indivisible. But there's something there and I'm here. And that's the contribution to theology Martin Buber made, the I-Thou relationship. Reinhold Niebuhr sought for years to find the vocabulary to describe this relationship between persons and the ultimate religious experience, which is an I-Thou relationship, which must be bridged with dialogue or communication words. That's our Western frame. I don't think I'm right, I know I'm right, because that's the language that God gave his revelation in, and that's the language that Jesus put his stamp of approval on, and because he rose from the dead, and a real person rose from the dead, not some foci of relationships in New Age mysticism. On the basis of that authority, I accept and am glad I was born in this frame. But as I told you, I did my doctorate with Richard Dettering in San Francisco, State College. He was doing his doctorate at Stanford, and he found a Navajo Indian tribe that had a different language frame where every time the verb changed, the nouns and the pronouns changed. Changed the action, the entities changed. Their thought pattern was fluid, idealistic. It affects everything you do. Prayer no longer is a dialogue, it's a nothingness. A loss of any sense. The ultimate religious experience is become one with that which is nothing. It's not an eternal talking relationship. If anything, the tongue is a problem. I can find you a sect in India that believes original sin was speech because it individualized undifferentiated reality. Now, I don't have to talk about these things or get into this kind of philosophy with the average person. This is trying to practademic, beyond pandemic, as I talked this morning, logodemic thinking. Progressive education is alien to all realistic thought. It is idealistic. Experimentalism believes reality is a sea of interconnected foci. I listen to Larry in his closing lecture every year. Stand and weep. Drop my lighter and I gotta find it. He would weep before the class in his closing lecture, which really was a contradiction in terms. He called it the ontology of experimentalism. Now, I've never met a preacher I respect the integrity of the degree I respected Larry Thomas. But he was a convert to experimentalism. He embraced it. Thank God he abandoned it in later years. And I take a little credit. And embraced the Christian faith. But when I was there, he would weep the closing session as he talked of what he called the ontology of experimentalism. Ontology is the philosophy of the nature of being. Metaphysics gets into nature of reality. There was some yearning, I guess, in Larry's being that made him want to go beyond. That's why I call it a contradiction in terms of giving being to a philosophy that denied being. But he used this contradiction in terms to talk about what he called the ontology of being. Reality is a sea. Fly over it. It's old hat to some of you. There are a lot of new people here. You can tell the difference between a wave and a wave. But tell me where the wave ends and the ocean begins. Now you've got problems. And from that he bootstrapped to reality is a great sea of change. And as all experimentalism proclaims, which is why progressive education began to shy away from facts and disciplined memorization and traditional things being learned, facts are going to change. The only fact that never changes is that every fact will change. The only thing that's absolute is it's absolutely true there are no absolutes. And since everything changes, you need to learn to cope with change. And since, and here's the ontology, life is a sea of change and we have no more reality ultimately at all than our participation in the sea. And our so-called individuality is nothing but a temporarily formed wave, a foci within the sea of change. And our reason for being is to maintain our existence as long as we can before it dissolves into the sea. And when you confront a problem that threatens your existence and your happiness and your pleasure in your wave-like existence, everything must focus in on removing that which impedes your satisfaction, your progress, me-firstness, and your education should consist of learning how to confront any change that threatens your happiness, your satisfaction, your being, with a way to solve that problem and get around it. And whatever works, the end justifies the means, your self-perpetuating, enjoyable wave. And truth is that which works for you, and value is that which satisfies you, your continuing maintenance until you dissolve. And the only eternity you have is the contributions you make while you're waving along to the sea. That's the philosophy behind this me-first generation. And with Henrietta Mears, it's bad enough that it conquered the world. What I don't like is the way it conquers the church from either ignorant leaders or self-serving leaders that if you can't whip them, you join them, that will not rescue you as peoples of a congregation from that senseless society. There is an eternity. There is another way. And it's the right way. It's been given to us in this book. And I don't care what anybody thinks. This is the right way. That's the wrong way. This is not wooden-headed fundamentalism. There's no man on this earth in the history since this book has been written that works any harder than I do to unpeel the nuggets and let you see what it really says. Now, I'm not finished. We've got a station break. We're leaving 56. Go to the Internet if you want to hear the rest of this. I got some more to say, but I'm going to take a station break. You make your reservations while we take that station break. I'm going to play one more song and let you finish your calls. And I've got enough voices of faith in here that if you were doing what you should do as my regular audience, every phone in here would be busy and some voices of faith would have two phones on their ear. Now get busy. Get on the phone. Get these reservations up. And I want to continue what I was talking about. Now I'm going to repeat what I said on the air, the voices of faith. If somebody's writing, there's a chance there's a phone ringing in front of them or they've answered and laid a phone down. So move around. Hover over the people. And I'm only going to go one more song, so I want them to be able to get their reservations, make their calls, and get through. So move around like firefighters and find where the phones are ringing as we play one more song. Oh, just because Waylon Jennings sings it doesn't mean it's a good song. He sings a lot of good ones. He's one of my favorites. But you need that one to put you to sleep when you're riding a train. Give me another song. I've just played that 10,000 times. That's just one of the fallback songs. You find me a good one. Keep calling. You don't need music to talk on the telephone. You do a lot of other things without music. Give me another song. Okay, don't take any more new calls. Finish the ones you have. And don't cut them off. Unless they want to preach a sermon. Take your seats. She okay?
Yes.
She okay? Everybody, you sure now? Is there anybody in this room that hasn't fallen? So don't be embarrassed. I remember in Hartford, Connecticut, I got my first experience with ice. And they told me in Connecticut, you're not a New Englander until you've fallen on the ice. You okay? Well, we're slowly fixing this place up. This week a new roof will go on. So pray for good weather. Pray for Craig Lamp. They took a pint of fluid off of one of his knees, and he's been having terrible knee trouble. He doesn't need to be on camera. Everybody knows Craig Lamp. We even had a song about Go See Craig. We might play that song again, so you shouldn't be able to recognize him. You might mob him. If it's something we need and we don't have it, we blame Craig for years. He needs a healing in his knee. He's been taking communion 10, 12 times a day. Didn't make it this morning because he was an emergency, draining the fluid off of his knee in Phoenix, and then ran into a dust storm on the way here. You need to pray for him because he's going to supervise the roofers. Told him to get an inner tube and he can float in that big tub of oil as he lifts it up. If he dangles that knee in hot oil, he won't need to drain anything off of the inside. But I was talking about this generation. You are programmed to go to hell. As innocent products of a state education that embraced a foreign philosophy, foreign to everything America stands for, based on idealism more suited to Indian Vedanta religion and Buddhism and mysticism of the East, and to the reality of the West, which, by the way, God chose as the vehicular oracle to communicate His word to the world. Is there any benefit to being born in the West? Yeah. We were entrusted with the oracles of God. And I don't have any truck for these prejudicial idiots that heresy hunters, whose greatest heresy is their own ignorance, that have neglected to recognize the promises given to the northern tribes, the descendants of Joseph, who got the birthright. Judah got the right to rule and the right to make the laws. And the promises to the northern kingdom are 100-fold more than the southern kingdom. And the Celtic nations are those northern tribes And the promises to Judah have been kept, and the promises to that house and descendants of Joseph will be. And some ignoramus that tries to make a British Israelite out of me is too dumb to even talk to. I study God's Word. That's why you don't hear too many of these ignoramuses preaching on the minor prophets and the prophets whose books were written. Written for the northern kingdom. And when Ezekiel said he sat where they sat, it wasn't by the river Chebar. He was transported, as he was later, back to Jerusalem. But if you don't believe in miracles, don't believe in God's supernatural power, don't bother to talk to me. I didn't believe it either till the resurrection convinced me. And then the book itself convinced me. These people have been the oracles of God and were a blessed people. I remember hearing Oprah Winfrey say, "You women realize how blessed you are to have been born in America?" In spite of the long way to go that women's rights have yet to travel. We're living in the shadow of a great tragedy that just happened. The spaceship that blew up. There'll be investigations galore, and we're going to find the product of this generation's the cause. Some little something like the sponge flying off and hitting the wing. It's a problem, but we'll fix it tomorrow. Lack of a work ethic, and I don't indict NASA, I'm just saying it's this generation. I always cringe and pray when I get in my planes, though I fly one that's safer than commercial, because I have to rely on mechanics of this generation. You don't take a pride in work. And doing a job right, just want to get the job done. It's the generation. There are executives that sit out there and listen to me and know that as I discuss staff problems, they live with it every day. But they have to compromise to get the job done and to look at the bottom line, profit. I don't have to compromise, and neither does God, and I represent Him. The job is not as important to me as it being done God's way. I'm going to tell you a volunteer that came in here. When I almost gave up on the ability of my teaching to reach anybody, thank God Melissa came along. When I think that nobody's listening, I look at her. She cares. Now, the roof's going on outside, and it's long overdue. We prepare the inside. We had some volunteers. I could name his name, but I won't. This is where you'll get in trouble. I want volunteers, but you're going to get in trouble if you don't understand something. If I want your opinion, and since Melissa's speaking for me, with no authority of her own, she knows who the head of this house is. She's speaking for me. If we want your opinion, we'll ask for it. Until we do, leave it home. Because that's this generation. You're all evaluative listeners. And my resolve was being broken down by people that I love, like kids that don't respect their dad because they've heard it all. People that tune you out because they aren't smart enough to get all the nuances of what you're saying, and they think they've heard it. And they wish you'd shut up so they could get the job done. Because that's the way they've been trained. We got a problem. We got to work our way through it. Whew. Now we're back to copacetic. And when you even start to talk about a problem, they aren't listening to you long enough for you to define the problem and the project. They're already figuring out how they would do it. Evaluative listeners. I just said earlier, I have jobs I want done. I don't want to be told how you do it. I'm not interested in what you've hidden behind the finished work. The walls better be held up. I'm not going to look at the studying. You get the job done. Don't tell me how. Here's the target. Get it done. But unless I say that, put a bridle on your brain and listen to me while I'm talking. I dealt with it all afternoon. You know, manse and ranch sound kind of like. And if you're half deaf anyway, and you don't listen anyway, and you got a cell phone, you aren't going to hold up your hand and say, "Sir, I want to reconfirm. Did you say ranch or manse?" And 9 times out of 10, if I say manse, they'll hear ranch and go to the ranch. And I say ranch, and they go to the manse. And I'll give you a perfect example. Something was supposed to be brought manse. It's not necessarily mansion. That's just a theological term for the pastor's manse. Something was supposed to be brought to the manse when I got home from church. So I set it all up so I can get ready to go to a festival. Same old guard. Same, but about 2 key ones that have access to me and 4 all total. They expected me to come home and be there. We're talking about a key. So as pre-planned, I call and say, "Go to the manse." Now, the first guy understood that. I speak pretty plain. And he went to the manse. Now, as a rule, never changes. You don't go there if there are 2 people without the key to something. Never changing rule. Am I boring you? I asked my wife when I went out today, before we play today's message tonight, should I cut out the correction I gave Dan? I like her. She said, "No." Call another one of the newer people. It's not rhetorical. I want a gut honest question. Should we edit it out or let it play? "No, everything you do is teaching. Let it go." That's the way I am. And I'm finding you people love to hear this, looks like. You look all very alert. Well, you're going to hear some dirt, you think. People all over Los Angeles listen for weeks for times like this. Reality television. They didn't have any trouble hearing Mansa Ranch. I didn't go where they thought I would be because I've been there for a couple of times in a row. So I call in just sort of having a hunch because it's the pattern of this person. "Did you bring the item?" "Oh, I forgot." And the other guy was left off to get his car somewhere else and he knew it too. So I called him. So "You're equally to blame. You didn't bring the item." No. "The sorry sir routine starts. There's 2 cards up there. They try various things. I bleeped up. That's one. I'm a asteroid orifice," so they use different word. I'm this, I'm that. You know, it's like, let's try this one. See if this will get me off of this hot seat. I can program the old guard till Jesus comes. And never will I have spontaneously until I cue him against thee, O God, have I sinned. Because of what I preached this morning. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. They get taken instantly. They don't see obedience as the reason they're there. They're there to get a job done. They don't realize that the first time they didn't listen, the first time they forgot because they wouldn't get a simple little business card and write a checklist down of the things that they need for a specific job that's done weekly. I can't get the old guard to prepare a checklist, and if they prepare it, they won't look at it. And after the years breaks my resolve down until I begin to wonder, am I a dinosaur that ought to be on another planet? No, I'm right. I've just been resisted as long as I'm going to tolerate it. The people in key positions, and there's great pain to me in this church to eliminate them. But the greatest pain is the love I have and the sorrow that I couldn't get them to as God. Couldn't get Israel to change their ways. So and then when I call, I said clearly to the first one, well, you're not going to do the job you were going to do. Another job, not so pleasant, that needs to be done, you do that. Because without the item, you can't do it. Of course, I'll go back and get the item. No, you won't. I know, Ed. I know the time. Don't know the cameraman. No, you won't. I call the other guy, I'm not giving it in sequence, and said, you're equally to blame. Has he been dropped off to get his car? I said, you go back to the ranch. Now, he had already decided when he was balled up that the item was supposed to go to the manse, so I could have said ranch, pancakes, or anything close to that. And he's going to think manse because he's already decided that when I run down, he's got his brain parked here, when he finally runs down and gets I get off of his correction tube, I know what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to take this item now to the manse. No, I said, go back to the ranch. So then I have a problem with the ranch just before I'm coming here to festival, and I call him to say, will you handle this problem? Well, I'm not there. Where are you? Well, I'm on the way to the manse with the item. That's not just a listening problem. It's I made up my mind what he should say, so I filter what he says because of my knowledge and my habit patterns and my routines. I'm tired of situation A with four or five elements in it, including one person. And then situation B, if there's a common element, this one person goes there, I'm going to analogize progressive education, how to solve this problem. And since it worked here in situation A, I don't have to ask. I can transfer what I did here to situation B because there's at least one common element. That's the way you serve your ego while you work. I know you're counting me down. I'm going to take a breath and keep going. Deep breath. You understand what I'm saying? A new person has sweat on his palms normally. Doesn't try that. When you have people that are familiar in the job, they don't listen anymore. Because the minute that you say the first few words that enables them to somehow think you're dealing with something they're familiar with, they already know what to do. We're having problems with the new people in the studio. The problem I had the other night when I set the stage for a festival to be going when I got here so I could interrupt it for a reason? We asked the person that was responsible. This is not rhetorical. We want to know why you did that. You had a clear order. Why did you do it? Well, I was told, and let me go ahead. By whom? An old guard person that's long gone. That when Doc's coming and he calls and he's on the way, you don't go to the next program, you go to music. Now, that's an easy little box to check. That I don't have to think anymore. No. If Doc calls and says he's coming to festival, whatever programming's running, when it ends, I just go to music. And that leaves out the fact that that's only been a rule of the past. Where'd you get this? From the guy that was here, the way they've been doing it. Well, now, I think you all have heard me. Whatever's been done here, I think I've said it, whatever has been being done is most probably wrong. Isn't that what I've said?
Yes, sir.
Is that new to you?
No, sir.
How come it's new to the people I'm hiring? And it isn't. That's the easy way. Now, let me put that in context. When I call out of the blue, they're doing their programming, they haven't prepared for a live festival, they don't even know a live festival is going to happen, though they're supposed to be ready for a live festival, with a crew call at 6:30 every day, and people in position expecting me to come unannounced any moment. But because we haven't been doing a lot of festivals, I may be coming back from the other side of town in the car and say, get a crew ready, I'm on my way, I'm going to go live. I may not make it at 9 o'clock, but I'll be live. And I'll normally say, run a crawl, Doc's on his way to be live, because that part of the old system was left out. That's an unexpected call out of the blue. It changes everything, has no accompanying orders with it, just simply says, we're on the way. Get a crew, make sure everything is ready, and then Cheryl starts scurrying around calling Voices of Faith because you won't keep your commitments unless you think I'm here. Thought I'd put that dig in. You know, you're a lot like children. Grown-up spiritual children. Don't patronize me, you may say. Well, then get on the front row and keep your commitments, and I ain't talking to you. The shoe fits, wear it. That procedure is light years removed from me calling and saying, this is what I want you to play, which is a change from the pattern anyway. It's not the posted programming. You play this service and you follow it with this festival. And I add to that statement, because this festival I can interrupt anytime I want to interrupt it when I get there. You don't cancel that order out by pulling out of the garbage pail something, an old guard member who left for that kind of routinized, non-thinking behavior, and overrule my orders. I don't like people thinking for me. Don't like people trying to anticipate and run ahead. Don't like people being helpful to the point of irritation. And the guys who messed up on the key, who couldn't do the job they were supposed to do today, were given an assignment to mow a lawn and do some gardening at the manse. Of course, the sun's shining out there. And the job they were going to do, put them in my house in an air-conditioned room. I surprised them and came back once, and one of them was standing outside smoking. that's okay. You know, he's got to have a smoke. That ain't the problem. And I went away and came back again. They were working. But when I drove through the gate, they were absolutely convinced that I was coming back to stay for a while and that I would let them in. But I don't need the item. I carry a key. So I come to get a book I'm bringing to festival, which I haven't opened yet. And I come back to the car, and they're all gathered right by the gate, where I can't drive out without hitting them, sweeping the same driveway they've swept 50 times. I said, "You bleepity bleep 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 bleepity bleep," using marvelous spiritual terms for those that are a little less than a perfected saint. Because I'm always going to deal with motives. They were working. They were sweeping. And the place didn't need to be swept. You are that gate not because you are wanting to work and get that driveway clean. You've already anticipated. You are convinced that I've come back and you now can do the job that you couldn't do because you didn't have the item. So you're gathering right there at the gate under the guise of making it convenient for me to hand you a key. Because you have figured out, I'm here now and you're going to be able to do the easier job. And so you're at the gate just so I can't go out without seeing you there. And you don't have to go find the guy on the other side of a 2.5 acre property. Because you're both ready to dive in there and do the job that isn't being done because the key was forgotten. And so I have the painful job of blistering somebody's ass because they're working. Doing something with wrong motives. Helping me the way they want to help me. Instead of doing what I want them to do. And once in a while I'll run into one that immediately sees it and realizes they just sinned against God because they did a dishonest thing. Two of them gathers there. Two people. They're going to hit the brooms with each other. Sweeping so that they're right there by the gate. In case I drive out, they've already forgotten the key, so they don't want me to forget that they're there and I can let them in. The old guard's learned how to survive. If they think they've cried tears over my correcting them, I've cried buckets over their failure to realize the spiritual growth that could have occurred. This leads me to a volunteer. Melissa's in here saying, we're going to get this retiled. We're getting the roof outside fixed, and as soon as it's fixed, we're going to retile the inside here. And someone, a volunteer, very helpful. I know your name. That's once. Now, I'm going to say what I wish I could say, the one who want to say it. If I want to listen to an asteroid orifice, I'll just break wind. That'll hit you after a while. It would hit you a lot faster if I could have said it the way I wanted to say it. Oh, that's awful, isn't it? Not half as bad as what you put me through. So one helpful genius spoke up. Well, don't you want me to be helpful? No! How many languages you want it in? Melissa made the comment, we want to do it as fast as we can. Though the genius pointed out, you know, I never would have thought of that. I probably would have sat here and had a festival and been upset because dirt fell on me. You know, taking that down, since, it's going to be a real dirty job. and going to take quite a while. So maybe we could speed it up by just putting tile over the top of the tile that's there. Now, let me say it again. If I wanted to listen to an asteroid orifice talk, I'd just break wind. I think I'll try it again because I don't think it's settled in. I want it to sound as gross as it really is. Some of you cannot figure out that you'd be better off to talk out of the other end of you. Then I wouldn't even be tempted to listen. I can really develop this if you don't give me a better response. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
This generation must not hurt your feelings. But there's a deeper spiritual problem. You are these people in Vancouver. You are the product of this generation who will not dig the holes for the same pay until you know why you're digging the hole. You never would have marched around Jericho. You would have factored mathematically how long it would take to get 3.25 million across the Red Sea against the odds of that water falling down. And there's no way you would have followed Jehoshaphat with no weapons to battle singing songs. Now, I've carried on a one-man war for 28 years on television against the ways of man. And I don't want anybody in this church that can't get it in their head. This church exists today because I came to town believing and doing the impossible, not the practical. And I'm returning to that. And if you can't get with it, get out. Cater to your feelings and go to hell. You are trained to evaluate everything. I've already told you, I'll have a mass ordination. I'll ordain all of you. Go start 700 churches in Los Angeles. And I will sit back and say, rah, rah, rah. You will do it God's way or He won't bless. Man's ways are not God's ways. And obedience of faith is running to the voice of the sayer you trust, not evaluating when you hear the sound of His voice. Period. And we got a crisis of maturity in this church. Too many of you have heard too much and have rationalized standing still. There is no standing still. You're either going to hell or going forward. Period. For you volunteers, you're not asked to come here with opinions. After you come here, if we ask your opinion, we want an honest opinion. There's room for creativity. I'm not stupid. But I'm not manipulative. Right now, I need hands, feet, and bodies, not minds. Most of your minds are corrupt anyway. According to deceiving, self-serving desires. Now, I'm hiring people. I need some more resumes. The people I really want are the ones that say, I want to follow you as you follow Christ. I don't care what you have me do. I don't expect a man with 5 kids and a mortgage to work for the same price as a teenager who doesn't have any obligations. It used to be a fireable offense here for anybody to tell anybody else what they got paid. That robbed me of the ability to pay people vertically according to what they were worth and what they needed. But I really need volunteers. I still think this ministry can 90% be run with volunteers. I have people that are given a day a week, a night a week. It's amazing what we're getting done with volunteers. Don't ask questions. Don't care what they're assigned, except for that one that figured out the fastest way to do this roof was to put tile over the old tile. I don't need you to do that kind of stuff. Just say, where's the ladder? And where's the most dirt coming down? Because that's where I want to position myself to do the dirty job. Because this pastor is trying to save you out of the dirt of humanity. And you need to get on board. You know, little babies, you think they sit and, oh, they're self-centered too. They squall and they bawl, but then they learn their lessons. But most of the time, they trustingly run to the voice of their father or their mother. They got a loving father or mother. It's these teenagers suddenly know more than their dad. Then when they're about 25, they can't figure out how their dad learned so much in the last 7 years. Most of you are my spiritual children. I still want to take you home. And I'm sorry if there's a pipeline to God for this church, not for your personal lives. I got it. You don't. That's just God's way. That there's nothing in this life as important as His Word, and no reward greater than helping get it out. That's what Paul said to the Romans. As he comes there with a passion to produce the hearing of faith, it's trusting hearing, running to the voice of the sayer trustingly. Some of you need to repent and do your first works over. Now let's get on with the reservations and get on the telephone. Now I realize I haven't given you a lot of time to call. We're 145 reservations short of where we were when I finished the festival last Sunday afternoon. I want that 145 to come in. But you can be seated for a moment. I'm looking at this board it still has on it. What I wrote on the board at the Shalom service. Be familiar to some of you. I spent a year on it. Purpose, function, structure, controlling forces. That's the what of any organization. Including the church. The who? Personnel. Clients. patrons, products. And that's who? The clients becoming different persons. What change in the clients, or what products do you expect to affect as a result of what the personnel do with the clients, doing it under the patronage of those who support it? Purposes, objective, subjective. Subjective, what anybody thinks the purpose is. Opinions. Subjective. Objective, official, written. Now, at the state level, there are some states that will not allow a church to incorporate, for example, because they feel it violates separation of church and state. Other states allow a church to incorporate, but there's abundant law on the books, judicial decisions, forgotten by the bureaucrats that want to get their fingers on things, that the corporation itself is not the church. The corporation is an intermediary, a useful instrument of contact between the church, which the state cannot create or dissolve, and the state that the church of necessity must deal with. And when a corporation is formed, that entity, its charter and its bylaws, its charter, particularly if it's a nonprofit entity, has to state its purpose. Its reason for being is stated in a purpose. And that becomes an official written statement of purpose. And that official written statement of purpose is augmented and diminished, added to and taken away from with bylaws and subsequent minutes and meetings. This church, and any church worthy of the name, loudly proclaims in its founding charter that the Word of God takes priority over any other written statement of purpose in its founding document. And that becomes the official written source of the purpose and the ways in which that church is to operate. When any organization starts, the founder with a vision, his subjective purposes rule the formation of the organization. Ideally, he surrounds himself. Ideally, he writes and objectifies his purposes, begins to function to achieve those purposes, builds structures to facilitate the functioning, and sets in motion controlling forces that protect the objective statement of purpose. Finds personnel that need to have talent, but that's not their reason for being there. They are there because they share and accept and commit themselves to the objective statement of purpose that at the outset is in the mind of the founder. You attract clients not because you just want bodies inside the structures. You attract clients who know your purpose and want the purpose to be effected on them. You seek patrons not because they have money, because support is more than money. And he who pays the piper normally calls the tune. So you seek patrons or pipers, sources of support, who want the tune the piper is committed to play. Objective statement of purposes. He's got $1 million. Doesn't share the purpose. He'll warp the institution and the hard, cold truth of the power of Mammon and King Dollar and the court of this world will start shifting and changing the purposes. And if you have all of that, which would be an ideal organization, objective purposes, articulated, a strong leader that has set it in motion, functions, structure, controlling forces to protect the purpose, personnel who want to affect the purpose, clients who want to defect it on them, patrons who want to support the purpose, you will produce the results in the clients. That's not the way it happens in life. Everybody's got an opinion. They're like that asteroid orifice I talked about. I hope that grossed you out. How many did that gross out? Let me see your hands. Well, maybe before you talk, for a little while at least, you will consider the possibility that that's what you are. Do I have to say it again, or do you have it? You got it? Most organizations start and borrow a constitution, so they have a structure that's out of whack to go start out. They start seeking support by any kind of hook or crook. They just want bodies, so they get clients that don't even know why they're there. And particularly if they get personnel with subjective purposes that collide with the objective. Jesus said, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." You've heard me say many times, only one person in history can say, "my church." Jesus. He bought it with his blood. His purposes are clear for those that are willing to dig it out. And the reason I've used the philosophy, elimination is as necessary to the health of the body as assimilation, is because once you have a structure, people are attracted to the structure, a bandwagon gets going, and they bring their baggage, their subjective views, their historic baggage of being educated into an insanity in terms of eternal life propensity. They have their views. Well, this is what a pastor should do. Well, to hell with you. This pastor is going to do what God wants him to do, and he that judgeth me is the Lord, and henceforth let no man trouble me. Find another one in town. They're already encased in boards and congregations. They want to be as free as I am, but they haven't got the guts. And I understand that they'll be out in the street. They don't want to start over. Well, I'm 73 and I'll start over. Because I ain't leaving. If you don't like where this church is going, you're leaving. You know, this is another one of the things that comes along with age. You know, I have the ability to see that some of you were getting up quicker 20 years ago than you are now. And it has nothing to do with enthusiasm. It has to do with joints and girth. I've noticed something else, that we're going to have to get some bigger seats in here in the, for the Voices of Faith. I mean, I had like David's Cave of Adullam, the have-nots. They didn't have enough to overeat. I had a lot of skinny people when I first came here. I've got a prosperous church now, and it shows. It shows. And the comforting thing about it is it looks fuller in here with fewer voices of faith, so I don't get as angry. Functions are threefold. Reason for being, raison d'etre in the French, which is really not translatable, but this is close. Reason for being, self-continuity, auxiliary. Reason for being functions, by definition, are those that carry out the objective purposes which are official. I already wrote it, but I'll write it again, and written. From Christ, written in the Word. Period. I'm never worried since I came to town. I'll take on, well, I think I once invited the whole Attorney General and all of his assistants to come and debate me on television. I'll take on the Supreme Court. Our charter says the Bible overrules everything else. So in any controversy, whether I'm doing it right, you better be ready to defend. I don't care if you're a Supreme Court justice, you better be able to defend with the Bible. Because that's what the state accepted as the statement of this founding church. Self-continuity preoccupied me when I first came here. I read the bylaws, read the charter, was on file with the state. One of the guys who threw out tried to say I was using the wrong constitution. He presented another one written by some attorney I'd thrown out and said I wasn't going according to the bylaws. That's one of the smart things that the church did before I came here. By accident, I never would have gotten the licenses in the name of the church, but they did. And that required that they put the bylaws on file with the FCC. So there they were. And I was living by those bylaws, not this gerrymandered, made-up thing that an opponent wanted to present. You got a pastor not afraid to take you on legal matters. God has, like David, led me down a path. It has sometimes been hard. I used to lament that God made my dad's faith so easy with the miracle of his vision and healing, and I had to work so hard. But I would not have been able, as Peter, would not have been able to strengthen the brethren with his knowledge of God's grace through Christ if I hadn't had to resolve the resurrection with hard study. So I would prefer to have had my miracle of healing when I was 20. And then I wouldn't have had to work so hard studying the resurrection and building a basis for faith. But you're the beneficiary, and so am I, of a faith that's been honed in the fire. Same way in these last days, this church has survived while others went down because I stayed 10 years ahead. And this has been part of the problem I've had with old guard staff members. They're just going to take shortcuts. They don't understand the complicated and intricate separations between that which is taxable and that which is unrelated business and that which is church business. The strength is the weakness. It's all God's got, so, you know. This can be owned by that entity, but it's got something we need over here with this entity, so I can move it, and thereby I don't have to ask him. That's my problem, and I've dealt with it reasonably effective over the years, more effective. Now I've got another set of eyes to watch. I didn't know how smart God was when he talked about a helpmate. Never had one. I looked for spiritual sons that would do what Rothschild's sons did. But I have someone that has only one motive, and that's to do it my way. You want to be on her good side? Do it my way. You want to be on her bad side? She's tired of me being made to look like an ogre, while the other guys who were supposed to carry out my orders were nice at the pastor's image expense. I've never had the chance. With most of you, to show you my heart. All I did was buy a pizza for some of the new guys. All they've done is fall all over me for a week or more to say thank you. I've sat old guard people down, drinking wine and eating fine food, and sitting at another table in a restaurant, and eating like kings and queens. And they reached a point of taking it for granted. Many times not even a thank you. But it was their due. They were working some extra hours. Is it a gripe session? No, it's a truth session. I want you new people to understand. I'm sure I'm talking to a lot of people that have had the experience sometime in their life and living in a marriage that's just gone stale. Where one or the other party quit putting out the things that started the love relationship. And when I came to town, self-continuity was the necessity. I used to sit here with one hand of my being saying, "Oh God, why do I have to do this?" I had to make God appear in need. We had to rescue the church on a daily basis. Sometimes we had to have them bring the money. We couldn't wait for the postal service. We had to get it hand-delivered on Friday. Marathon after marathon that gave the core people of this church who were on the front lines. And inside me, I was grinding because I knew that giving in the church should not be done that way, but the church had lost faith and had lost leadership. And I made the tragic choice, thinking each day God will honor and people will catch the vision and the giving will come without having to ask for it. And it's come. You don't see much fundraising here, do you? I'm telling you now, I'm starting Secret 16. I'm not going to tell you what it was. It was a luxury. You got to know what 6 was, and you got to know what 15 was. The others, you wait until it's done, then you find out. I'm giving you an early warning. Secret 16 starts now. We just finished 15. 16 starts now. And you got till Christmas. That's the longest one you've ever had. And I'm reversing it. I want 700 given 5,000 and 300 given 10,000. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to let you that made the pledges in the previous one apply it to this, but renew your pledges if you didn't finish it in the last one. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That ought to make you rejoice. You made a pledge, you're going to pay it, and I'm letting you get credit for Secret 16. You get credit on both. But pay your pledge and make your commitments anew. I want these ribbons pulled down, change the Secret 16, and want 700 to give 5,000 and 300 to give 10,000. Why? As a testimony to the value of the Word and as a trust of your pastor's leadership that we keep expanding the Word and sending it out. Now, but when I came here, self-continuity was necessary. The structure was already going, cracked and broken and on the verge of bankruptcy. So self-continuity in terms of time and structure and effort became our almost reason for being. There are lots of organizations that start out with purposes, and self-continuity becomes their reason for being. Some denominations are like that. Some organization formed, some bright guy comes along and says, we got a structure here. And, you know, some member of the church wants to sell an insurance policy. The structure's here. Auxiliary functions come along. Gideon Bible Society, that's a good organization. But they find the structures that already exist, so they can come from your congregation and motivate you for Gideon Bibles. Once a structure exists, you have these barnacle ministries. Doesn't mean they're bad, but they don't have a structure of their own. Their reason for being is to attach to other structures. And it's fine. We're one of the givingest churches in town. But an auxiliary function has nothing to do with reason for being. It's because you're there, they want to add something. And sometimes it seems to be serving a purpose. Somebody, he's an insurance salesman. And, you know, we've suddenly got enough personnel that we qualify for group insurance. Now, the purpose of the organization was to put Bibles in Liberia. But as we have followed that organization, and we've got a structure and an office, and we've got an organizational chart, and we've got personnel and secretaries and supplies, and we send Bibles, and we've got enough personnel because the patrons have come along that want the Bibles to go to Liberia. All of a sudden, we've got Bibles knee-deep all over Liberia. The only reason for being in this organization is over. It needs to dissolve. But somewhere en route to getting them knee-deep, somebody figured out we had enough personnel to get a group insurance policy. Now, it doesn't matter if we've got Bibles in Liberia knee-deep, we can't afford to disband because we'll lose our insurance. See, I took this taxonomy for 18 years on the mission field. Missionaries were lonely, so they came up with a fellowship plan. Various places on the field, and the missionaries would gather maybe once every 3 months for fellowship among themselves, among the personnel, social. It wasn't for the purpose of converting Ghana. It was, we're tired, we need some R&R. We're tired of speaking the foreign language. We just want to get together and have some coffee and some tea and play some checkers and gossip. Well, now, the minute they started that, here you got independent missionaries, men called working. The minute they started this structure, women ran it. I mean, the missionaries were out there working with the chiefs and baptizing people and trying to figure out where to hold them. Robes were not in abundance on the Congo. So it was left to the women to set up, quite rightly. They cooked the food. They set up the social structure. Then the Assemblies of God grew to a point where they needed some field representative and some field organization. So instead of creating an administrative missionary group, they already had a structure. This little social organization that had their secretary and the one that was in charge. So they made that the Field Missionary Association. I still remember my first trip overseas. The head of the missions department said, Gene, what's, in your analysis, the biggest problem or other problem? I said, yeah. What is it? Missionary wives. Huh? Missionary wives. They had already set up their little competitive arrangement and their pecking orders. And it was fine for the social affairs. It had nothing to do with the reason for being. It required a new structure. You see, I've not been rattling cages just since I've been here. It was that cage rattling that had Tom Zimmerman make me the research director to reshape the Assemblies of God and their Committee on Advance. And it happened. My knowledge of taxonomy. Ernest Williams was a spiritual leader of the Assemblies of God par excellence. When a man walked to the platform, he had a presence about him spiritually. But it was the early days of the Assemblies of God when they were afraid of education. Now, these are things that they've been afraid I'd tell. Ralph Riggs was a very educated man. He was the assistant general superintendent, and Ernest Williams was so afraid that he would be elected that Ernest Williams used his spiritual leadership to somehow try to block Ralph Riggs from being elected, who was a very educated man. When he retired, he taught at Bethany College up in Santa Cruz, used to be in San Francisco. So he created a monster because the superintendent and the assistant superintendent preached at district councils and camp meetings, and the exposure would get them votes for general superintendent. He's retiring. It's obvious the assistant superintendent has the biggest exposure across the country. So he created four of them, or five of them. Expanded the office of assistant general superintendent to four or five. Now, he thinks he has immersed Ralph Riggs in this pot until at least some other voices will be heard, till he won't get some educated man in there that isn't spiritual. And he created a many-headed monster of people competing. If I did nothing else for the Assemblies of God, I made Tom Zimmerman's leadership intact and destroyed and did away with that many-headed hydra of assistant superintendents. I was the floor director. I spoke at the mid-Wednesday night meeting and message of the church of the Council on Evangelism that launched it, and my work was finished with the Assemblies because Tom Zimmerman, I was the floor director to get the passage as he was the superintendent, and he had plans for me, and God had other plans, and I resigned. Nobody threw me out of anything. And then the fellowship says, well, we're new, help us. And they didn't have me for 17 years. And then I came here and resigned. And all those jobs were easy compared to you. Just thought I'd tell you that. Well, I didn't fall in love and be willing to die for those other organizations. I was not their pastor. I'm your pastor. I wasn't responsible at the judgment seat of Christ for these men. But as I traveled before the Committee on Advance to use this taxonomy to effect transition from missionary leadership to national leadership, those that go way back will remember Choyong-ji, largest church in the world in Korea, saying and testifying right here, it was my trip to Seoul, Korea, that gave him the faith to build that giant church where he wasn't dependent upon missionaries. But I would go, I would see. I remember going to one of the regions of the Philippines. Now, they had sent a printer, which is makes a contribution to objective purposes, but can't, by nature is not, could be just an auxiliary function or a self-continuity function. He was printing literature when he went there under the direction of the missionaries. The missionary went home on furlough because he was the only American there. They left him in charge. By the time I arrived, every worker in the missions compound was working in the printing shop. I can look at a structure. Any organization that matters a structure. I can look at a structure and tell how much of which structure occupies the time and resources of that organization and whether it serves an auxiliary self-continuity or reason for being function. An auxiliary function had taken over that mission region. Was the printing good? Yes. We're not evaluating whether it's good or bad. It's auxiliary. It's not reason for being. Now, I've been honest when I came here. I didn't want to be pastor. There's plenty of other churches in town. I didn't come to build around the corner area church like any other church. I came looking for the uncommon man or woman. That would fall in love with the Word and sacrifice themselves however much in that portion of their time that belongs to our joint activity. We have a joint objective. You follow me as I follow Christ and taking the Word to the world. Period. The benefits you get as a member are auxiliary. And without cussing, but literally, I'll be damned before I will let your self-continuity or mine interfere with our reason for being. Now, I surrounded myself with people that quit trusting my calling, who thought they knew and would get somehow directions and products of this age, thought it was more important to get the job done than to do what I told them to do, who became evaluators of the practicality of my orders, and who would substitute their own plans for the ones I gave them. I, as God's domata in this church, we can worry about its ability to carry on when I'm gone. God can bring his Joshua as he did after Moses. But as long as I'm living and breathing, I embody the objective purposes of this church. I'm the voice of God's word to this church. And I haven't heard any complaints about the way I divide this word. What I've heard is some who get it in their head, they can separate the man from the message. Well, you're doing what God hasn't done, because he hasn't separated me from the message. I am the messenger. And you are going to get, I brought you back to faith. You are going to get that other objective I came here for, respect for God-ordained leadership, or you're going to get out. I told you when I came here, if it's a monkey sitting here, you're going to respect the office. You don't have a monkey. You have a faithful pastor. In 28 years, I can stand as Samuel and say, I've been faithful. And you are going to respect the office and park your brain and get your ass humbly in here to run to the voice of the sayer and do what you're told or get out. Now get on the phone. Now, some of you are going to say, well, you know, I just want to be helpful. Aren't two heads better than one? No. No. A camel is a horse made by committee. God never spoke to Israel. Made him gather at the door of the tabernacle. He made his presence known. He spoke through Moses. They rebelled against God. You can't find a verse of Scripture where they're cursing God. They're cursing Moses. And God viewed that as cursing him. Your practical education has made you fail to understand you do what you do is unto the Lord. I'm accountable to God. You're accountable to God. And when you support the pastor, you're supporting God's way. The pastor doesn't deserve it. If he's so bad you can't do that, go find one you can. Get out of the church. God never, ever blessed a rebellion against a leader he appointed, even if that leader went bad. David, the man after God's own heart, would not touch God's anointed. Huh. I've decided you're not anointed so I can separate the message from the man. You're anointed when you preach, but not as a person. Sorry. Disallowed. Get out. Get out. Thank God for my granddad. He's the meanest man in the world, but he raised me right. He made me go get the switch that he's going to whip me with. And if he used the razor strap or the paddle, he made me kiss it. Today, your kids dare to look at you and say, if you spank me, I'll call 911. That's what this education has produced. No, I don't want your opinions. When I want it, I'll ask for it. Then I want your opinion. Right now, I want help. I want helpers. They'll run to the voice of the sayer. We've got a lot of work to do. Secret 16 is already in the making. I don't think Secret 15 disappointed you did it. Look what else we did at the same time. And today, I don't know if they made the copies yet for the Voices of Faith, but if the Voices of Faith have them, yeah, they have them. And you can call and get the number where you can order the little dish, the 30-inch dish, that can pick up the new satellite, and it's less than $500. Now, I will continue to find other sources. And there are some people that, no matter how simple it is, don't want to set it up themselves. So I will get the data and all the information you need to call local satellite companies and see if they'll come out and set one up for you. But at least we have a common source across America for those that are in areas they don't have anybody that can set them up. You call the Voices of Faith, they'll give you the number to call. I'm not selling the dishes. I'm not responsible for it. We have found a supplier, and that's just a reference service I'm giving. I will not be held accountable for anything that they do. You understand? I've done my best examination. These, from all that I'm able to determine, are honorable people. They have connections with the same people who built our uplink, and that person has proven himself trustworthy and reliable. But all I'm doing is providing you a reference. We're up there. I provide the message. You can pick it up 24 hours a day on a 30-inch dish if you're in an area that you can't use the large satellite dish. Call the Voices of Faith. They'll give you the information. The next move is yours. I still need the 135 more reservations, so get busy on the telephone. I'm getting some interesting reactions. There's a former high school teacher that sure agrees. At first, I just taught what I knew rather than what they told me to teach. When I taught what the program told me to teach, the students didn't learn anything. I'm behind you, right behind you. Right, they were not to learn facts. There are no unchanging facts. They were to, an interest is a constituent of learning. They will learn when they want to. So, since there's no facts that never change, find what they're interested in. Let them do it. And then we produced a generation of people that want a job that's fun. They want a job that's satisfying. Well, I want to do meaningful work. For who? Or for whom? Meaningful for God or for you? Meaningful for eternity or for this now generation? I don't think I'm right. I know I'm right. They don't want to work. Work's doing what you naturally don't want to do. That's what work is. Work should be sacrifice. With direction, where the direction should be eternal and God ordained. That's why I always deal with people at attitude level. God's not interested in results. He's more interested in cause than effect. He's more interested in the way you do it than what you do. I said, you're seeing the genes. God came down to town 28 years ago. I got worn down, but I got a helpmate now, so I'm, you know, I got a new life and I'm starting over. I expect to live another 40 years. I mean, I'm really encouraged when these 101, 102 year old people call in and are listening to me. I got to catch them. And I'm aware that some of these 101, 102 year old listeners, maybe not, but I think they probably don't want to install their own dish. So there will be some that have to call satellite installers. But normally we're talking $100 or $150. That ain't peanuts to some people. But if you want to listen to the message 24 hours a day, and all these years of teaching, get caught up or reviewed, you need to get a dish. Particularly now that I'm working with the language as much as I am, I think radio is a better listening tool because you listen better, but you do need to see. And you need to get the dish. And I sure don't need this. This isn't going to pick up. It isn't like a regular satellite that people just pick up and read the satellite news and go from satellite to satellite. This is designed strictly for my people that want to listen or have the capacity to listen 24 hours a day and were prevented because of zoning restrictions in their areas. So it isn't something we're doing to make money. It's something we're doing to entrench your soul's journey of faith to the right place. To know it's there. The message I'm preaching in Romans 3 that I'm just starting on. The wondrous benefits of access, availability, companionship with the oracles of God. That's what this church exists to do, to take it out to the world. I wish there were 10,000 doing what I'm doing, but I can't find anybody else. If you've got anybody doing it, and you can prove they aren't doing it after they've listened to me, then tell me so I can rejoice. And we will find they either don't have the worldwide audience, or most likely we'll find they don't have the message. About every 400 years, God sends someone along. He's chosen, prepared, primed, and He gives them the message. It's not some new truth. It's digging out the old truths that have been there all along. That's all Paul did. He gave meaning to the Old Testament. And he quotes Psalms more than any place else that he goes to. He didn't give a new revelation. He unpacked the revelation that had been there, that angels bent down low to examine and prophets sought after. And unto him was given the opportunity to unfold it, the gospel to the Gentiles. Martin Luther didn't discover anything new. He went back to Paul and the Psalms, verse by verse through Romans, verse by verse through the Psalms. Karl Barth shook liberalism apart with his commentary on Romans. You don't need any new truths, as F.B. Meyer said. You need to rediscover the old ones and unpack them, wash the dirt off, and let it go. And God has uniquely positioned this church with a pastor with no funny mystical ideas, no claims of some special revelation, with the tools honed through the years and the freedom to tell it the way it is, without being called on the carpet by a bunch of dumbhead presbyters that have got a pet doctrine and not enough education language skills, talent, or integrity to face the truth. There'd never been, not even in Paul's day. Paul came to it and said it, henceforth let no man trouble me. But look at the years he wasted at Corinth with that critical bunch. Look at the years he spent trying to save the unsavable, the Jews of his day. He still felt the pressure. He still had to go to that council in Acts and listen to James and those brethren from James divide up the gospel as though there's two separate gospels. And these can go to the Jews and they have to keep the law. You can go to the Gentiles, they don't have to keep part of it. He came to his senses when his own church at Galatia that he founded was invaded by those Jerusalemites. And that's when he said he wouldn't be silent for a minute. I have more freedom than Paul had. It took me all these years and a matriculated journey to do what Lex Miller begged me to do on the steps of the church of the Quad at Stanford. We are positioned to unfold the truth, leaving the consequences to God without fear or favor. Don't have to wonder whose feelings are going to be hurt with the truth. It's unique in the history of the church. And you're a part of it. And settling on your lease, that's as criminal as winning a marathon and laying down the last 100 yards and not finishing the race. Your pastor is not about to die. He's not about to retire. So get behind me and let's go. Get on the telephone. Well, for Secret 16 in these few minutes, there's 13 given 10, that's 130,000. And 23 given 5, that's another 100,000 in it. 20 is 100. So that's 130, 230, 245,000 in it. I'm close. They're not bad for not asking for money, isn't it? It took a lot of years for dignity and giving. And I'm not unaware. I wish you people would wake up and give me a chance to love you the way a pastor wants to love you. And I'm just really tired of beating on you about reservations, beating on you about children stuff. It's like I'm still potty training, which is what I did last Tuesday night, if you happen to be listening. In fact, I think I'll play that potty training festival sometime today. If you didn't listen, I bet I've intrigued you. Get on the telephone. That's nice that you've made those commitments toward Secret 16. Secret 16's got a number that I was tempted to skip and just say, this will be 17. But I've decided to stick a finger right in the devil's face and any other orifice that he will make available. Let's get on with it. Get on the telephone. All right. Now I've got 119 to go. I want those reservations for next Sunday. I've done, what you're doing is you are, as I said, you are forcing me not to have miracle services because if we don't have this live time on Saturday, you don't get the reservations in by Wednesday. And if I teach instead of sitting here and railing at you to call in, you don't call in. You are not to get out of your seat and go to the bathroom at home. You're not to eat. You're not to do anything till you call here and make your reservation. Until you treat it like that, we will still be potty training you. instead of moving on to victory. Get on the telephone.